Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, you will need to press the 1 followed by the 4 on your push-button phone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, October 22nd, 1996. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Dan Cafferly, Director of Digital's Corporate Public Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Welcome to Digital Equipment Corporation's first quarter earnings teleconference. Thank you for calling in. Our Q1 earnings release is available on PR Newswire and BusinessWire and can be accessed through the digital homepage on the World Wide Web. We will also have a post-view number to call to hear a recording of the teleconference beginning at 12:30 p.m. today. I will discuss the details of that at the conclusion of the teleconference. This morning, I have with me Digital's Chairman, Bob Palmer, and Digital's Chief Financial Officer, Vin Mularkey. Bob will open the teleconference with an overview of the quarter, and then Vin will go over the numbers in more depth. We will then open the session to questions, and we'll end the teleconference promptly at 11:15 a.m. Please note that any statements made during the teleconference which are not historical facts are forward-looking statements as that term is defined in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties and are discussed more fully in the company's annual report on Form 10-K and the company's other filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now I'll turn the teleconference over to Bob Palmer. Bob?
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. As most of you know from the information we sent you this morning, Digital's first quarter results were very disappointing to our shareholders, our employees, our customers, and our management team. Our performance, both financially and operationally, is obviously not where we want it to be. However, underneath our Q1 financial performance, we have a solid foundation for growth and profitability. I remain confident that Digital will achieve the financial and strategic objectives that we've outlined to you in the last couple of months. But we clearly have some fundamental sales and marketing issues to resolve in order to achieve competitive levels of profitability and growth. What I'd like to do this morning is put our Q1 performance in perspective and talk about the steps that we're taking to improve our results. I firmly believe that the actions we're taking are absolutely necessary to ensure the company's long-term success. Digital's transformation is a multi-year process, and there are no shortcuts. But as our first quarter results demonstrate, the actions that we take for a long-term benefit of the company often have very short-term negative consequences. This was certainly the case with the decisions we made in Q4 to realign our worldwide sales force. It was clear that we needed to increase our account coverage model and our sales compensation plan to better meet customer needs while improving Digital's overall effectiveness. And as you know, we combined the large account sales force from the former accounts business unit with the indirect sales operations of the systems business unit. We also began expanding our direct coverage to some 2,500 accounts from less than 1,000. And we created a new enterprise sales force to serve both large and medium-sized businesses on behalf of all of Digital's business units. These actions allow us to cover more accounts, enable improved customer loyalty, reduce channel conflict, lower our costs, and they will achieve greater sales productivity and revenue growth in the future. However, the sales realignment also meant new sales management, new account assignments, and increased goals for our salespeople. Anytime you make changes of this magnitude, particularly changes that have an effect on the relationships with customers, there is a price to pay. And the price, unfortunately, was greater than we'd expected. The sales force changes took longer and were more difficult to implement and more distracting to the sales force than were planned. As a result, our selling ability was temporarily reduced, and our product revenues were significantly affected. Most of this work is behind us, but it will take some time to realize the full benefits of the changes. We still have a lot of work to do to improve the effectiveness of our demand generation programs, increase sales support, and improve our revenues. We're clearly focused on strengthening our direct sales force and on providing the tools it needs to serve our customers better and win new business. We're finalizing the implementation of an improved sales measurement plan that better supports our corporate strategy and our business unit goals and provides more opportunity for our sales professionals. And we're continuing to develop stronger and more effective distribution partnerships. During the last 3 weeks, we've also taken several steps that I believe will strengthen management of our business operations in key areas. As acting general manager of the Computer Systems Division for the past 4 months, I've had the opportunity to assess our talent and our approach to the marketplace. I concluded that we have significant talent within the business units that make up the Computer Systems Division, or CSD, but that we no longer need the extra layer of management represented by the CSD structure. Harry Copperman, Vice President and General Manager of the Systems Business Unit, and Bruce Claflin, Vice President and General Manager of the Personal Computer Business Unit, now report directly to me and are key members of the Executive Committee. Harry's immediate focus is on strengthening our market and marketing and sales. As the manager of the Enterprise Sales Force, he will act on behalf of all of our business units. In addition, he will manage the geographies, enabling a closer coordination between the geographies and our sales organization. Bruce Claflin is leading an aggressive effort to establish digital as a leader in providing Windows NT-based solutions for the enterprise and to make digital a focused, profitable competitor in the enterprise market for Intel-based products, particularly servers. We also strengthened the management of our European operations with the appointment of Hans Dirkmann as president of Digital Europe. As head of our German operations, Hans demonstrated that he can manage effectively in an uncertain and difficult economic climate. He also has a 25-year record of success at Digital, and he understands both our company and the customer environment in Europe. As concerned as we are about Digital's recent performance, I think it's also important to recognize the progress that we continue to make on many fronts. Our PC business, for example, continues to improve, and we remain on track to achieve our near-term financial target of break-even in that unit by the end of the current quarter. We also announced new leadership products that will improve our competitive position in key markets. One example is our refreshed line of PC products from notebooks to personal workstations that are optimized for Windows NT. This gives us the broadest line of Windows NT products and services in the industry, leveraging the performance of both our Intel and Alpha platforms. Together with our broad strategic alliance with Microsoft, these products and services put Digital in a strong position to achieve industry leadership in providing Windows NT-based solutions. Earlier this month, we also introduced our breakthrough FX32 translation technology, which enables Alpha systems to run most 32-bit Windows and Windows NT applications as fast or faster than they run on comparable x86 systems. The combination of Alpha's industry-leading performance and x86 compatibility through FX32 is the basis for building volume demand for Alpha in the Windows NT market. Most important, perhaps, is the progress we made in developing and implementing our strategy for growth, a strategy that continues to win positive reviews from customers, partners, and analysts. In addition to continuing to invest in OpenVMS as a major strategic platform and supporting our large OpenVMS customer base, Digital is targeting three strategic growth opportunities: high-performance 64-bit Unix platforms, Windows NT throughout the enterprise, and Internet within and between enterprises. In each of these areas, we made some solid gains during Q1. In the area of high-performance 64-bit Unix, for example, we saw increasing demand for our new Alpha Server 4000 and 4100 systems. And we sold our 2000th Alpha Server 8000 system, which was purchased by Netscape to power its worldwide website. As for Windows NT, our Alpha NT revenue doubled over the same period last year. And we won a contract to consolidate Lockheed Martin's enterprise mail systems. With 120,000 seats, this is the largest Microsoft Exchange implementation to date. We announced record-breaking SAP R3 performance on Alpha running Windows NT, and we gained more than 3 points of market share with SAP. We continued to make strong progress with our Internet products and services. DataQuest now ranks Digital number 2 in web server revenue share with 11% of the market. And we won one of the largest single intranet contracts signed worldwide with Kavner, a Norwegian multinational. It will link 40,000 employees in 400 offices worldwide. In our meetings with analysts last month, we outlined our plans for taking further advantage of these opportunities. Our go-to-market strategy concentrates on 9 targeted market segments. These are areas where Digital has the products, the services, the alliances, and business partners necessary to achieve significant market share and profitability. I'll not list all nine this morning, but they include data warehousing, Windows NT integration, mail and messaging, and internet commerce. Although I'm not pleased with our Q1 performance, I am confident that our strategy and go-to-market plans will help us achieve competitive levels of growth and profitability. There's no question in my mind that Digital has the talent and the tools necessary to be a very successful competitor in this industry by executing this strategy. Based on my own conversations with investors and analysts, you would agree. But you have obvious doubts about our ability to execute. The only sure way for us to alleviate those doubts is for Digital to deliver positive and consistent results. We have made significant progress during the past 2 years since we restructured the company into business units. Excluding restructuring charges, we've improved profitability by more than $1 billion during that time. And we added significant strength to our balance sheet with a stronger cash position than at any time in the last 5 years. Despite our Q1 performance, we're determined to achieve continued improvement this year as well. I can assure you that we're pursuing that goal with a great sense of commitment. We will fix the problems that are keeping Digital from living up to its potential. Now I'd like to ask Vin Mularkey to review the numbers.
Good morning. As you have seen in this morning's press release, the story behind our disappointing quarter one results is one of weak product sales. All other aspects of the business are largely on target. As Bob explained, the realignment of our sales operation was the primary factor contributing to the product revenue shortfall. Overall, we missed our product revenue expectations by approximately 10%. We are off our expectations in all three geographies, as well as all product areas. The specifics of quarter one revenue are: Alpha system sales grew by 4% year over year. In the personal computer business, we continue to make good progress toward the achievement of our quarter two goal to break even. While reported revenues were down 17%, worldwide sales out of the channel grew by 14%. We continue to see good demand for Windows NT, which grew over 60% in the quarter on both the Intel and Alpha platforms combined, while our Unix systems were up 9%. At $1.4 billion in revenue, our service businesses met expectations for the quarter. Both network services and multi-vendor services showed continued strong growth, while the digital maintenance business declined at expected and historical rates. Product gross margins held up reasonably well, given the product volume shortfall. The quarter one product margin level of 31.1% represents some year-over-year improvement. I continue to have confidence in our ability to achieve the 35% product gross margin goal set recently in our intermediate model. Service margins are on plan and represent a solid sequential improvement. This is consistent with the expectations we've set for improved service margins over the course of this fiscal year. Management took actions during the quarter to curtail operating expenses in response to the slowdown in product orders. Quarter one ending population levels are down to 57,000 employees, a reduction of over 2,000 in the quarter. Restructuring activities are progressing throughout the company. As previously announced, beginning with the first quarter of fiscal 97, we'll report other income and expenses as a new line item on our profit and loss statement. This line includes gains and losses from divestments, interest income, and interest expense. Currency impact for the quarter was not material on a sequential basis. However, on a year-over-year basis, the stronger U.S. dollar negatively impacted profit by over $70 million. Our balance sheet continues to show strength. I'm particularly pleased with the continuing improvements in inventory management. The company's cash position remains strong at just over $2 billion. During the first quarter, the company repurchased 1.5 million shares of common stock at a cost of $57 million. We will now take your questions.
Victor, we are now ready to take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, you will need to press the 1 followed by the 4 on your push-button phone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and your questions will be polled in the order they are received. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your polling request, you may do so by pressing the 1 followed by the 3 on your push-button phone. If you are using a speakerphone today, please use your handset before pressing the numbers. One moment, please, for the first question. Terry Shannon. Please state your location, followed by your question.
Good morning. This is Terry Shannon from Shannon Knows Deck in Ashland, Massachusetts. I have a question for Bob and one for Vin. Bob, Digital's first quarter earnings were even uglier than most people anticipated. While the loss pales in comparison to the 1994 Ides of April loss, it doesn't look good. What is the likelihood that Digital will be back in the black at the end of the second quarter? And for Vin, what percentage of Digital's first quarter revenue came from Europe? Was it significantly below the 43% you reported at the end of the third quarter?
Oh, Terry, you're right. This is a disappointing outcome for the quarter. As I mentioned in my remarks, we had to do the consolidation of our sales forces, which in the long term will clearly help us in our costs and our ability to satisfy customers and grow the business. But we really underestimated how distracting that would be for the direct sales force. And so we got off to a very poor start in our traditionally, historically weakest quarter. That being said, toward the end of the quarter, we began to see the changes start to kick in. And we expect as a result, we don't know the future, but we expect as a result that we will return to profitability in the December quarter as the sales pick up and we get this thing behind us. We saw it, as Vin mentioned, in virtually all geographies and just about every group that was impacted by the sales changes. Importantly, there was a rather significant group, our federal government group, that was not impacted by these changes because they were organized somewhat differently in the first place. And in that group, with exactly the same products and services, we saw substantial growth in product sales on a year-over-year basis. So that gives me some confidence that we understand the problem and we've gotten it behind us for the most part, and therefore we will return to profitability in December.
Relative to your second question, Terry, the European sales levels were roughly the same in the first quarter. They were down 1 point at 42% of total revenues.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Bruce Francis, please state your location, followed by your question.
Bruce Francis from CNBC. The 4% growth rate in Alpha is rather notable at a time, especially when we've seen very vigorous growth rates from companies who are competing with you in a lot of segments of the server sector. Are you concerned about permanent loss of market share, or do you think you've just not a lack of your ability to convert customers in your existing customer base? Do you think you're losing the battle, for example, with Sun or IBM?
Well, certainly we're seeing, Bruce, plenty of competition from Sun, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, and as you know, this is a very competitive industry, but our assessment is that we're not losing many competitions head-to-head with our enterprise servers, particularly our Unix, a very large memory database, and that we're doing very well. But those are more complicated sales in the 8000 series of product, and it really takes the full attention of the direct sales force generally to bring those sales in. Since they were distracted by the management changes and getting new goal sheets and getting new accounts in many cases, we really lost that momentum. In the products that are sold primarily through the indirect channels that are alpha-based, we saw good growth. And so I'm pretty confident that as we get stable with the sales force, we'll see the alpha revenues continue to grow again. You know, since we introduced alpha-based systems and services, we've sold now almost $11 billion worth. So the install base of alpha out there is getting pretty large, and it's been very well received. We don't see any real slowdown.
Do you anticipate, though, as a result of those slower sales, that we will see a slippage in DEX market share in against those competitors?
Well, in Q1, we saw slippage because the Unix market is growing at more than the 9% that we grew at. But in all previous quarters, we were growing at significantly higher than the Unix market average. And so we've been gaining share in Unix at least for the last year, maybe 2 years. And we gained with specific partners. For example, with Oracle, we were the fastest growing Unix platform for Oracle, and we're now their number two largest platform. And keeping in mind that we started very late in Unix, in fact, we only started since I became CEO with a industry standard Unix, and we've now been recognized as having the leading implementation of Unix, 64-bit or otherwise, by D.H. Brown and other independent analysts.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Eric Convey, please state your location followed by your question.
Good morning, guys. It's Eric Convey at the Boston Herald. I'm calling, I'm curious about semiconductor operations, just how things are going there in sort of a broad sense.
Well, semiconductor operations achieved their Q1 plan. As I recall, I don't have it sitting in front of me, but as I recall, they were right on, maybe slightly over in terms of their commitment. And we had several other groups, as a matter of fact, that also achieved their plans. Our services division, which is 42% of the company, our revenue, was on plan for the quarter in profit, and they also had some good growth in some of the new service offerings. So we had some spotty results, as you'd expect, but for the most part, in product sales worldwide, we clearly suffered with this change in the sales force. But Simi's, as I said, met their plan, and they've consistently done so. Other questions?
Gerard Meechner, please state your location, followed by your question.
Yes, I'm with Bloomberg News. My question is for Vin Malarkey. You indicated that currency had a $70 million negative effect on the quarter. What did that work out to per share? And also, Mr. Palmer, you made a reference to federal government sales holding up. If you could give me some detail on federal government sales, that way we can get a better sense as to why the company is confident moving forward.
Had the currency impact year over year not occurred, we would have been essentially break even for the quarter.
The government sector is a significant sector for Digital. It's been growing rapidly since we made some sales management changes in the last fiscal year. And they had a very aggressive objective for Q1, which was sales growth year over year in excess of 28%, which they overachieved.
Then if I may just pursue the currency question, would there not some effort taken to hedge the currency swing so that it didn't have a $70 million effect? And if so, why perhaps it did it not work?
Yes, there were efforts taken in that regard. Now, hedging operations and currency contract operations provide coverage for about 3 months. The base point that we're relating this performance to is year over year. So quarter one a year ago, of course, that three-month period of hedging would have expired by the end of December. Essentially, hedging operations and currency contract activities buy you time to react, whether that reaction be through price changes in the marketplace or through cost reductions in the business. It's not a permanent fix.
I'm just a little unclear. Are you saying then that the currency contracts expired prior to the end of the quarter? And, of course, the dollar did most of its rallying in September. So are you suggesting that in the final month of the quarter in September, you didn't have the contracts in force when you needed the most?
No, I'm not.
Can you help me understand it then?
Let me try once again. This is technically rather complicated, but I'll try to keep it brief. The $70 million profit factor, currency impact on profit, is comparing the September quarter of this year with the September quarter of a year ago.
Right.
The U.S. dollar relative to the Japanese yen in particular strengthened considerably. That situation was hedged last year in the first quarter. It was covered with a currency contract. Mm-hmm. That currency contract had about a three-month, on average, about a three-month time frame associated with it. And would have expired in the approximately in the December time frame.
December of 95.
That's correct. Not 96. I'm sorry, the December of calendar 95.
Right.
Calendar 95. My point is that currency contracts or hedging forward contracts don't solve a currency problem. What they do is, they buy you some time. They provide coverage for a short period of time so that in your business operations you can determine how you're going to respond to it.
Is that to say then that when the contract expired in December of 95, you did not write a new contract?
Well, we would have written a new contract for the business that developed over the course of the December quarter. And that would have been for about 3 months, and that would have expired in March. Mm. So there's no change here in practice whatsoever. If you think of it this way, every quarter, your current business, you protect through a currency contract for about 3 months.
Okay, so you did have a contract in place. It just didn't have the same protective quality that the year-ago contract did.
Well, Vin pointed out that on a sequential basis, the changes were not material. But when you're comparing year over year, you see the impact. And if I'm not mistaken, when IBM reported their earnings yesterday, on a revenue basis, they indicated about a 3% negative impact for currency. We had a similar 3%. If you look at the $90 million impact on revenue divided by our $2.9 billion in revenue, you see that it's about 3%. Mm-hmm. In our case, where it occurred was not offset dramatically by reduced costs, which also occur when the dollar strengthens. And so of the $90 million revenue hit, about 70 hit the bottom line. Mm-hmm. But it's consistent with the same kind of results I believe I read for IBM, our largest competitor.
And so you didn't benefit from reduced costs by the change in the currency, and that ultimately.
You benefit some, but it's most of it hit the bottom line in this case. So it depends on where it occurs and what's going on in all the countries we do business in. It's very complicated. If you have more questions, maybe taking this offline with someone that actually manages currency or that Dan can fix you up with would be helpful.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Joanne Cianello, please state your location, followed by your question.
Hi, it's Joanne from the Ottawa Citizen up in Ottawa. We're obviously a little preoccupied with our manufacturing plant in Canada. I was wondering, I guess it was Vin that was talking about the PC market. How is it that your PC sector will continue to move closer to break even, even though the revenues are down 17%. I know that you said that the network sales out of the channel grew. I was wondering if you could explain that a little further, please.
Well, what we had announced at the end of Q4 was that we had too much inventory in the channel, so we were going to somewhat slow down the input, that is the sales, into the channel and focus on selling out of the channel in order to reduce that inventory. And Bruce Claflin and his team have successfully done so during the quarter, so that although the revenue sales that we recognize in PCs into the channel were down, sales out of the channel were up, as Vin mentioned, 14%. And so the PC unit continues to make progress on reducing those inventories. And given the fact that prices continue to fall in the PC industry, you don't want a lot of inventory in the channel because it very much hits the P&L. I think we're making good progress there, and with the new focus on enterprise customers and Windows NT in particular in that unit, I just talked with Bruce yesterday, and he remains firmly committed and believes that they will achieve break-even at the end of the December quarter. Now, anybody that knows anything about PCs knows that it's a very uncertain environment, and there's always some risks in it, but we're on track, we believe, in our PC business.
And there's no plans soon then to increase the production into and the sales into the network, into the sales network yet?
Well, most of our sales and PCs are in the indirect channels, most of them, although we're now giving direct sales force credit for sales and demand creation for PCs, which might spur demand somewhat. Our Kanata facility remains an efficient and heavily loaded facility there, and we're very pleased with our workforce there. So I don't, you know, at this moment, it's like I say, PCs is a pretty rapidly changing market, but at this moment, I believe our plans are in place and we're executing to those plans.
Next question, please.
Bill Bulkley, please state your location, followed by your question.
Hi, I'm Bill Bulkley at the Wall Street Journal in Boston. What's your current goal for employment levels? Is the 57,000 a bottom, or do you expect to continue to reduce the workforce in the current quarter and by the end of the current year?
We expect some continuing puts and takes. Like, we're adding talent to the company in areas where there's demand and we can make a profit on that talent. We're also consolidating facilities and downsizing, particularly in overhead structures, which is why we took the restructuring reserve in 96. And we believe that the appropriate population, based on our revenue plans and opportunities that we see, is about 53,000. So over the course of the year, we expect some further downsizing and also some attrition.
Do you expect that to be done in the current quarter, or do you expect that to be by the end of the fiscal year?
By the end of the fiscal year. It'll be distributed relatively evenly throughout the year. It's driven by business unit, and it's scattered over the 100 countries we do business in. So it's, you know, it's basically going to be distributed throughout the year. We expect to end the year at about 53,000 plus or minus.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Paul Judge, please state your location, followed by your question.
Hi, this is Paul Judge with Business Week in Boston. I just wanted to get back to the question of market share for a moment. You'd mentioned that there had been some slippage in the first quarter. Bob, do you anticipate, or is Digital's market share falling in other product categories across its business line?
I don't think so. I mean, it's I'm sitting here thinking about which particular business line. I think in general, my point is that in general, we lost momentum in Q1 because of the sales force changes. And so to the extent that our competitors didn't have that problem on a relative basis in Q1, we would have lost share. On the other hand, for the fiscal year, we don't expect to have any significant loss of share. And we had been gaining, in particular our Unix business, had been gaining it well over the market average growth. So, you know, I think we're set to resume our growth. In NT, by the way, we are continuing to be very strong, and as Vin mentioned, our NT on Alpha business grew over 100% year over year.
Uh-huh. Can you detail for us a little more what the dislocations were? You said that the sales force was distracted.
I'd be glad to. We used to have, for those of you that aren't that familiar with us, we used to have a direct sales force which covered about 1,000 large accounts of Digital's on a worldwide basis, and it was managed as a separate P&L. We called it the Accounts Business Unit. We also had an indirect sales operation that covered a large number of customers through our partners throughout the world. And it also had its own overhead structure and P&L. What we found is that we needed to cover more customers with a direct-facing Digital person, particularly in Europe. And so we made some changes by consolidating the sales forces into one unit, and by expanding the sales force coverage, particularly in Europe. We've tripled our coverage in Europe. At least we're on a path to do so. And we've expanded our coverage in the U.S. and Asia as well, so that we'll move from somewhat less than 1,000 customers covered directly to about 2,500. Well, in doing that, clearly the sales metrics changed, the sales management changed, different accounts were assigned to the salespeople, and it takes a little time to learn those accounts. And all of that certainly was distracting to our sales force. And as I mentioned, in those cases where there were no changes, we saw continued growth and we had good performance. For example, our federal region. On the other hand, wherever we had a lot of change, not surprisingly, we saw a loss of momentum in the direct sales channel. We think that that's on the way to being behind us. It's not totally behind us yet, but there's evidence that direct sales force is settling down and understanding the new metrics and hopefully be motivated by the opportunity to do better.
Are you able to get qualified senior salespeople, Bob, to add to the sales force?
Yes, we have been able to get, and in many cases we're not adding, we're just assigning additional accounts. For example, if you had a medium-sized account that you were covering full-time with a person, but that really didn't cover all the expenses, wasn't profitable, you might assign additional accounts to that person. So although the one account remains the same, then they've also got some new accounts to pick up, and that gives a digital representative. We still intend to fulfill the demand largely through our partners, our indirect channels. And so, but the answer to your question is yes, we've hired some new sales leadership. For example, our leader of our sales operations in the UK, which is one of our largest operations, just joined us, James Stevenson from Hewlett-Packard. We had acquired a new leader for the systems business unit sales in France. It came to us from Lotus. And so we're able to hire the people that we need.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
John Abbott, please state your location, followed by your question.
Hello, it's John Abbott from Computergram in London. Over the last year or so, we've seen DEC sell off asset after asset. What do you say to outsiders who complain that the company seems to be being run for cash, that you've sold assets not because they were non-strategic, but simply because they were saleable? And that as a result, since your customers can now get just about everything you sell elsewhere, there's little further justification for DEC's continued existence.
Well, that's a premise that I don't agree with even remotely. In the first place, I'm not aware of any asset sale that we made that was of a strategic product. In general, we made asset sales to either reduce conflict with the channels partner, like the RDB sale to Oracle, which resulted in dramatically improved sales of Oracle on our platform. In fact, we're now the number two platform for Oracle. So in that case, we had a good product and we had a good team, but it was a conflict with a major partner that we resolved by selling the product and the operation to Oracle. In other cases, the products strictly were not strategic to our business, like the sale of our disk heads and tapes business to Quantum. But we retained the part that is strategic, which is the system storage architecture. So I don't know what you might be referring to. Frankly, we had to raise some cash in any event to accomplish the restructuring. I think it's quite notable that the company has funded its restructuring, all the transition packages for the employees that have had to leave the company, and at the same time improved its cash on hand by, I believe it's more than $500 million year over year, through the sales of these non-strategic assets.
So what is the cash for on your balance sheet? Is it to fund future
It's to fund future investments in the areas that we've identified, the growth of the company in the nine business segments. We identified nine business segments that are not today dominated by any competitor, that are growing rapidly, that are at least $1 billion in revenue today on a worldwide basis and growing at more than 25%. And we've said we're going to deliver with our partners complete solutions in those business market segments. And to do so, of course, we've got to have some cash to invest. And we still have the ongoing restructuring that we announced in Q4 to pay for. We took a reserve for it, certainly, but now we have to pay for it, and that requires cash.
Okay.
We've also stated that we would like to stabilize the number of shares we have in the external market, that we continue to have dilution through our employee stock purchase plan, and some of that cash, as we previously stated, will be used to stabilize the number of shares outstanding.
Okay. Can I ask just one very quick other question? If you genuinely believe that NT on Alpha offers unrivaled price performance, and you've mentioned 100% growth in that market, aren't you fatally compromising your message by selling NT on Pentium Pro?
No. See, we see that we're offering customers a wider platform of performance than any competitor. Like, we really, it's not a theological issue with us. We offer both Intel, actually leading performance on Intel. We just won a number of awards at the Hot Iron Awards here for our server performance. We've set benchmarks on database performance on our Intel-based Pentium Pro servers. And we have a wide range of products there, from laptops to the, as I mentioned, clustered Intel product. But in addition to that, we have Alpha product that offers a higher performance should the customer need that higher performance. And in our case, we have now incented our sales force to sell either one completely independent. They get the same credits regardless, and so do the channels partners. So our objective is to be agnostic about which architecture and try to provide the best architecture solution for the customer, whatever problem they're trying to solve.
Next question, please.
Larry Zuckerman, please state your location, followed by your question.
Yeah, it's Larry Zuckerman, New York Times in New York. I have a question for Mr. Palmer. This seems to be the third quarter in a row that DEC has had disappointing results. And in the past, you've been quite upfront with your executives about if they don't make the numbers, they're out, and several executives have departed. And I'm wondering, since many analysts do agree that the strategy at Digital is correct, the problem, as you said, it seems to be execution. Is it time for you to step aside and let someone else come in who can execute the strategy?
Well, I think that the execution of the strategy at this point is clearly the challenge that we're facing. It's taken us some time to get a management team that works well together and has the capabilities that we need, but I believe we have that in place today. I continue to have the support of my board of directors, and we continue to make progress. You know, as I mentioned before, in the last 2 years, with the exception of the restructuring reserve that we took to get more competitive, we improved our profitability from operations by more than $1 billion. This is rather a significant improvement. Clearly, the last couple quarters have not met expectations, and we've said so. We've identified the actions that we're taking to correct those problems. I believe that we have a strategy that the analysts agree is compelling, and the execution is the issue. This is a difficult turnaround. We've been working through a lot of previous problems, but we remain committed, and I believe that we can continue to make progress this year, as I said in my remarks. Relative to my own career, clearly that's the responsibility of our board of directors, and I think everybody's accountable, and I'm no exception.
Next question, please. We have time for a few more.
Jeff Bliss, please state your location, followed by your question.
Yes, this is Jeff Bliss from Computer Reseller News on Jericho, Long Island. I have two questions, one for Bob, one for Vin. Bob, could you be more specific in what channel partners in North America can expect to see as a result of this sales restructuring? And Vin, how much more manufacturing space does Digital plan to sell off?
In the case of channels partners, it's hard to be specific, but what it means is that the with the additional coverage and demand creation, we expect it to be easier for our channels partner to service our customers and to grow their business. Very hard to be explicit about it. Clearly, though, we're creating more demand by having more digital people calling on customers. In the high end in particular, those channels partners should be able to do better because the high end sales, like the 8,000, require a lot more technical support than most of the channels partners have. And by covering more accounts directly, we should create more demand for them in that space. In addition to that, in our PC business, we're letting some of our more capable, larger channels partners do configuration of the PCs from their own inventory of subsets. This enables them to carry less inventory and to be able to configure what the customer wants and get delivery quicker, which is in everybody's best interest, and so there should be some increased coverage there. In addition, by eliminating the conflict that we had between the accounts business unit and our indirect channels organizations, we believe we helped our partners as well. On a manufacturing space, although you asked Vin, I'll just make a comment. We I'm not aware of any major manufacturing facilities at this moment that we're planning to divest of, but we continue to have improvements in productivity so that you'd expect that we would have, on an annual basis, maybe 10% or something of the manufacturing space needed as we continue to implement those productivity improvements.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
John Auerbach, please state your location, followed by your question.
Good morning, John Auerbach from the Boston Globe. A question for Mr. Palmer. I know how important Alpha has been for the company, and you've articulated that repeatedly. Given the drop down to 4%, I'm wondering specifically what your goals are for Alpha come Q2 and into Q3 and 4 of fiscal year 97.
Well, we expect Alpha to resume the growth path that it had been on as our sales force becomes more stable and gets the new metrics and, you know, gets back to business as usual. There's every indication that that would be the case, but, of course, you don't know until it happens. I should note while I'm talking to you, since you're local here, that our semiconductor operations is one of the operations that did meet their plan in Q1 and continues to operate very well for the company. Also, you may have seen in the media, just within the last week or so, I saw an article where Microsoft has publicly announced that they will no longer support the MIPS architecture on Windows NT, making Alpha's position even more important in the industry.
Well, if I could just follow up quickly, I think your growth of Alpha was as high as 40%, and then it dipped into the 30s. Now it's gone to 4. Do you expect it to reach those 40% levels again?
Well, it depends on by product line, but probably not because the base is getting larger and larger. So every year, if you're growing at 30 and 40%, the compares are getting much harder as a percentage because the overall base is larger. Since we introduced the Alpha Systems in 1992, we've generated about $11 billion of cumulative product and service sales, and so it's getting a pretty large representation out there in the marketplace. But I think that, again, we would see a return to more normal growth in Alpha and Alpha NT, as we mentioned, more than doubled. So I think we've used all of our time, as I'm told here. So let me just make a few summary points. The Q1 results were affected by sales coverage and structural changes that I believe are required to make digital more competitive, and we think those impacts are mostly behind us. On a fiscal year basis, our fiscal year ending in next June, we're determined to demonstrate continuous improvements in profitability as we have over the last couple of years, excluding our restructuring. We do have a very clear strategy. It's been widely communicated internally and externally, and the feedback we've received from our customers and partners is very positive. Our strategy and focus for growth are supported by the right technology, the right products and services, and the right partners. And finally, I have confidence in our management team and its ability to execute this strategy. I'll thank you for calling in this morning.
This concludes Digital's Q1 financial results teleconference. Before we leave, I want to give you the information for the PostView conference. For U.S. callers, the PostView number is 1-800-633-8284. That's 1-800-633-8284. For international callers, the number is 1-303-446-5399. That's 1-303-446-5399. The reference number for the PostView call will be the same as you use for this call. If you have additional questions, please call me at 508-493-2195. Thank you again for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. You may all disconnect, and thank you for participating.